You're listening to the ISACA podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'm speaking with Ian Cook, columnist for the ISACA Journal's IS Audit Basics. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Ian's latest column in the ISACA Journal Volume 6, titled Ethics in Information Systems. Thanks for joining me, Ian.
Thanks, Abby. That's a lovely introduction.
I'm glad that we could have you on because this is actually going to be your last column in the journal. Is that correct?
I will never say it will be my last. It will be my last IS Audit Basics column, but I reserve the right to write future articles.
Well, I'm glad you could be here with us today. So to get us started off, in your article, you identify the 7 risk zones of the ethical operating system. What do you believe are some of the most critical to address, and why is that?
Well, first of all, I would say that all of the risk zones are equally important. But it's important to know that some of them may be more applicable depending on the industry that you're in or even where your company is located. So, for example, if we consider risk zone 1, which is about truth, disinformation and propaganda, that might be more applicable if you were, say, a media company. So here we were talking about deep fakes or fake videos. So think about Nancy Pelosi and having the video slowed down for her to appear drunk. Whereas risk zone 2, which is about addiction and the dopamine economy, here we're basically talking about social media companies. So that's all about likes and things like that and keeping you scrolling and watching their ads. Risk zone 3, about economics and asset inequalities, could apply to many industries, but really it's quite where industries intersect, where someone's acting as a middleman. So you could consider something like Facebook, where they weren't displaying ads for apartments to certain people based upon race, color, the national origin, and their religion. And then finally, as an example, risk zone 4, machine ethics and algorithmic bias. Here, think about algorithms being used to predict things. So in Ireland, and I believe in the UK this year, due to the pandemic, algorithms were used to actually score students. And this has a real effect on people's lives. So it's deciding what student is going to study or what college they can go to. So I suppose overall, the important thing is to consider is that there are 8 risk zones and how do they fit into your actual enterprise.
How can personal or individual bias obstruct ethics in information technology, and what are some ways to avoid that?
The first thing really is for us all to acknowledge that, yes, we all have biases and that these are based upon who we are. So our age, our gender, our religion, etc. Then we also need to acknowledge that those biases, intended or not, can lead to prejudiced decisions, which we, at the time of making them, we generally believe that these are correct. To fix this, first and foremost, we need to move and get more diverse teams. And this is something that ISACA is trying to help with its One in Tech and She Leads Tech programs. These more diverse teams, you would hope, would lead to more views in the team, more checks, more balances on our work, more balances on the algorithms, and even as auditors, more balances on our audit programs. Here, try to think about something like someone like Joy Boulamwini of the Algorithmic Justice League. And here she was able to detect bias in facial recognition.
In your ISACA Journal Volume 3 article, In Defense of Privacy by Design, which was published earlier this year, you stated, YouTube was designed to be viral. Comments are a part of that. No thought went into how this could be abused. In Ethics and Information Technology, you wrote about using risk scenarios as a tool to anticipate tomorrow's risk today. Can you explain why it's critical for organizations to plan for the future and what is at risk if they don't?
The quote you're referring to was in relation to videos of children in various innocent states of undress, say they were swimming or performing gymnastics. And what users were doing is they were flagging in the comments, they were flagging timestamps to say, go to this part of the video to see something. This generated a lot of bad publicity for YouTube, as you can imagine. And what YouTube eventually wound up doing, after saying that they could fix it, was that they banned comments on videos, and I quote here, deemed vulnerable to paedophiles. YouTube are a company that are big enough and bold enough to survive something like this. But imagine this is happening with your startup. So it really shows that IT ethics can have a real effect on people and on companies, and that not planning or considering how your software can be used and how it can go wrong can lead to reputational damage. And if you're a small enough company, perhaps even bankruptcy.
How important is it for machine learning technology to be consistently and thoroughly tested?
Okay, and the first thing I've got to say is that I'm not an expert on this in this area, but I am more than willing to give you my thoughts. First of all, it's important to note that fundamentally, there are two different types of machine learning. The first, supervised machine learning, where training a data set to recognize, say, I don't know, a cat. And we do this by labeling cats, pictures of cats, and telling the machine learning algorithm what a cat looks like, and feeding it loads of different cats in the hope that when we feed it a cat, it'll say, ah, that's a cat. But it's not only that, when we like to get to the position where we feed it a cat that it hasn't seen before, it's able to recognize that that is a cat. In this case, it can get unusually looking cats and categorize them incorrectly. So if the cat is something that it completely hasn't seen before, it won't be able to categorize it correctly. In unsupervised machine learning, this is fundamentally about pattern recognition. And these algorithms train with unlabeled data by trying to recognizing patterns in them. So in this instance, we put all the cats in and it groups them all. We put all dogs in and it groups them into another section about dogs, but it doesn't know that they're actually cats and dogs. It's really all about segmenting and grouping. This type of machine learning scares me somewhat because we never fully understand how it works. It's correlating data by itself. We need to think about the cases where things have gone wrong. So think of Amazon, where it was using machine learning to scan resumes, and it wasn't bringing the correct candidates through because it wasn't doing it in a general neutral way. It wasn't doing that because it was trained on the data that Amazon already had. And the data that Amazon already had was the resumes of the engineers that it already hired, and these were overwhelmingly white men.
On a related note, do you have any tips for auditors who might be in a position to push back against high levels of automated technology?
Well, my thoughts are that these type of tools can really help us to do our jobs better. They can help auditors the same way they can help people in IT or potentially in any industry. I attended Eurocax in October and went to a session where a company was using supervised machine learning to detect fraud, and that's really a great use of the technology. Equally though, they ran unsupervised machine learning over payroll data, which, as I mentioned earlier, scares me somewhat, because we don't really know what unsupervised machine learning does. We're in the position whereby, say, under legislation like GDPR, we have to be able to tell a data subject how their data is being processed. And you can't really do that if you don't know what the algorithm is doing. So overall, taking those two examples together, I'd say that I'm pro technology, but it has to be used in compliance with the law and it has to be used ethically.
Do you believe the majority of ethical responsibility falls upon executive leadership, or is there a way for middle or associate level staff to contribute more actively to the organization's ethical practices?
This is another great question. And before I answer, I really hope that my manager isn't listening or doesn't listen to this podcast. I believe, as we say, often say in auditing, that ethics is set by the tone at the top. So that this really reflects management's leadership and their commitment to being honest and ethical. However, that's not to say that we can't disagree with them, and we can't, if we want to, try and call them out. If you look at the current controversy happening in Google, where they fired Timnit Gurbu. So she's a technical co-lead of Google's ethical artificial intelligence team. And nearly 800 of her fellow employees have joined a campaign in support of her. She was fired after she was asked to retract a paper focusing on ethical problems involving a kind of AI that Google was actually using. But the CEO of Google, following the pressure from her fellow employees, has now apologized, and he said he would investigate. So ultimately, as I said in my article, I believe that we all behave ethically, that we can all make a difference, no matter how small that is. And tools such as the Ethical OS can help, and so can joining organizations such as ISACA's One in Tech. One of the primary goals of One in Tech is to engage in conversations about the social and ethical implications of technology.
In your article, you state tools such as the Ethical OS can provide direction, aiding us in behaving more ethically in our work, which will ultimately have a positive impact on the reputation and, in turn, finances of our enterprises. Can you elaborate on the relationship between a company's reputation and its finances and how ethics can affect it?
I love history, and I think an example from history illustrates this beautifully. So in the late 1990s, I think, Microsoft was accused of illegally maintaining its monopoly position in the PC market and in software, primarily through technical restrictions on PC manufacturers, and by bundling Internet Explorer with its operating systems and PCs. So it used that to try and quash other organizations, one of them being a company called Netscape. Now, no matter what you think about the legal case, you could very definitely make a case that in this instance, Microsoft behaved unethically. And they spent a lot of time trying to defend that case, because I think it was the FTC in the US wanted to break them up. That case was eventually settled in 2001. So in between that time, what happened is that Microsoft took their eyes off the ball, and they didn't see the new mobiles coming. They didn't see mobile computing coming to replace personal computers. So really that cost Microsoft money, and you could argue that being unethical cost Microsoft money. However, if you look or consider the current tech backlash, Microsoft doesn't get mentioned. So at the moment, we're talking about Google and Facebook and Twitter. And these were all brought before Congress recently. Microsoft doesn't get mentioned. And I think the reason is that they've learned from their unethical behavior in the past, especially under the current CEO, Satya Nadella. And I think that will allow them to flourish when the current big tech companies, and at the moment, the FTC have launched an investigation into Facebook, including some 40-odd states in the US. And a couple of weeks prior to that, they launched an investigation into Google.
So those were all the questions that I had prepared related to your article, but I wanted to give you the chance to address the ISACA audience with any final thoughts about your column or any final thoughts about really anything. So if you'd like, you can go ahead. The floor is yours.
Sure. Okay. I suppose I would say that many of the examples that we've just run through here have been about big tech. And that, to me, is really because big tech are more at the forefront of technology. I think as time moves on, that these things could affect any enterprise. So I therefore encourage all listeners to download and read the OS ethical framework. As I said in my column, I would share concerns with any IT auditor going to the CIO with some of these findings or some of these concerns. But I do think they are the future. And at the very least, we have to be aware of them and we have to have them in the back of our minds. I would also encourage anyone listening to join ISACA's One in Tech program. It's only getting off the ground, but the more people that join, the better. And if you've been interested in anything that we've come across or discussed here, also consider ISACA's new CIDPSE certification. Privacy is going to be a big area in the future. It goes across many of the areas in the ethical framework. And I think having that qualification would be of great benefit and also increase your knowledge.
Thanks, Ian. That's all the time we have on this episode of the ISACA podcast. To make sure you never miss an episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast today.